Hi, I'm Carlos from FNR. Just want to take a minute of your time before you listen to your favourite podcast. Did you know without Windsor Management Insurance Brokers, FNR would not be streaming football 24/7? Imagine that. We wouldn't even be on air. So if you're a business or a club and you need an insurance solution, contact John Mangos and his team at Windsor Management Insurance Brokers. They love football and they support FNR. So make sure you back them. Here's their number, 03-9663-2411. That's 03-9663-2411. Give them a call today. Cheers, amigo. Hope you enjoy this podcast.
Culture Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome everyone to a wonderful Wednesday. You're on FNR Football Nation Radio, Australia's first and only 24-hour radio station dedicated to the beautiful, beautiful game of football. I'm Carlos Alberto Diego and this is Culture Cafe, the only breakfast show dedicated to football across this fine land. We are your voice of football, so join the conversation anytime today on 03-9944-9999. That's 03-9944-9999. Our SMS number is 0428-933-345. And of course, you can also join in the conversation on Twitter at FNR underscore radio. And those people who want to join in the conversation, with thanks to our great friends at Ital, you can win a premium-packed Ital Colomba, along with Ital's new improved Greek Kouladakia, the egg twist biscuit. For the best caller today on our live shows, 9944-9999. It's a huge hour in the cafe this morning. FNR news with Athos Syrianos coming up very, very soon. Club Corner, we chat with James May, the president of Lidcombe Churches Soccer Club in New South Wales. Anthony Barbieri, senior coach of Avondale FC in the NPL in Victoria, joins us in Planet NPL. In Power and the Passion, we catch up with Jeremiah Sullivan from Aussie Mags, the Newcastle United supporters club in Australia, and of course, to cover all the Asian Champions League games last night, Asian football expert Paul Williams also joins us. Plenty to get through, so let's get into it.
Oh, that's brilliant! Oh, that's wonderful!
FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Yes, the kick us off this morning. It's a big Champions League morning this morning. Not only Champions League last night with the Asian Champions League, but also UEFA Champions League. Athos Syrianos in the newsroom this morning. Good morning to you, Athos.
Good morning, Carl. So not only that, it's testing times at FNR. Not only are we waking up to a bright sunny day. We're waking up and it's dark, cold. And
I know. But we're talking, what warms our hearts, though, Athos, is we're talking football 24 hours a day, every hour, every day.
And especially when one of the Australian sides in the Melbourne Victory last night pulled off an absolute coup in defeating Kawasaki 1-0 to keep their Asian Champions League campaign alive, with the 91st minute Costa Barbarossa's goal securing the win for the home side.
It's a stoppage time. Now, Barbarossa! Yes! The Melbourne Victory stay alive in group F. They have been knocking and knocking for the last 10 minutes. And surely the winner has come in the 90th minute. No wonder they celebrate big time. They're going to knock off the J-League champions, aren't they?
The other result in Group F also favouring the victory, with Shanghai SIPG defeating Ulsan 1-0 away to prevent Ulsan from jumping into clear second in the group. And the victory and Ulsan now sit second, equal second on 5 points, and will meet very shortly to pretty much determine who will go through to the next round of the Champions League.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Really persistent effort last night from Victory, wasn't it? It was fantastic. After such an up-and-down season, people were a little bit sceptical of the fact that they've got a plan A of how to play, and they don't have a plan B. But last night, I think the change of personnel throughout the game from Kevin Muscat really breathed life in the Melbourne Victory. It was a terrific win in the end.
Yes, Kevin Muscat did make many bold changes in having his faith in youth, and that was one of the things Victory people have been very critical of Muscat, of his reluctance to put youth on. But as we saw, he trusted the players on the bench, and although many players like Bezat Barish, as we saw, probably wasn't a bit happy. He got subbed off. It all paid off in the end.
That's a big story today, his reaction to his substitution. And it will be interesting to see how behind closed doors Kevin Muscat deals with that, given that they went on to win the game. And it could have actually derailed them if in the end they didn't win the game. So I think that behaviour is just something that they shouldn't tolerate. And I just wonder what he might do about it. He certainly won't castigate him in public, but I wonder what he's going to be doing to him at training, especially when that door's shut and they're having a man-to-man talk.
Yes, full credit goes to Kevin Muscat and the victory there. Well, elsewhere, Sydney FC has narrowly escaped further Champions League embarrassment, courtesy of a strike from one of their most reliable.
Open up for Sydney here. Mezieski finds a space for Luke Wiltshire. Plenty in the box to try and pick out. That's Simon arriving. Is it over the line? They claim the goal. Mezieski has thumped it over the line, but it's going to be Matt Simon to score, I'm sure. And Sydney FC are level with 20 minutes to go. The Champions League dream is alive again for Graeme Arnold and his team.
Yes, you heard correctly there. Matt Simon equalising away to the Kashima Antlers. The Sky Blues are still yet to win a game in the ACL, having only managed the two draws and still sit at the bottom of Group H.
Ethos, I know you're an unbiased newsman, but are you a little bit critical of Matt Simon, are you, as a striker?
No, he is one of the A-League legends, and the fact that he constantly finds the back of the net, him and someone like David Carney, you know, we go on about their age and how, you know, we need to give youth a chance. But if these guys are still scoring goals and the aim of football is to win games, why not have them in your team?
I think the criticism around Matt Simon at the moment is he's not scoring enough goals, even when he comes off the bench as an impact player, and he has in the past done that. He's come close a few times, but that was a really important goal for them yesterday, even though they've got a mountain to climb to qualify for the sudden death stages of this competition.
Yeah, they do sit a few points away from the automatic qualification spot there. Well, moving on to Europe, and we do have UEFA Champions League being played at the moment. Probably two of the more interesting games as we saw last week. There were a few blowouts, and there is another blowout game tomorrow, which has probably already been decided in Bayern Munich's game. But AS Roma and Shakhtar Donetsk are currently at 0-0, as are Manchester United and Sevilla. AS Roma were shockingly defeated last week by Shakhtar 2-1, so Shakhtar going to that game with leading on aggregate, but it will be tough going to Rome and maintaining that lead, as well as Sevilla, who travelled to Old Trafford with 0-0, unable to get that result at home. So it's going to be a tough game for both sides playing away.
Well, they're in a tough part of the competition now in the knockout stages, and some blowouts last week. These ones here. And Man U haven't always been playing champagne football, scoring big amounts of goals this season. So we don't expect that to be a blowout, but you never know. You never know when it comes to a Spanish team versus an English team.
You never know. And we're going to now move on to home soil and NPL talk, speak about some NPL. And Kingston City and Port Melbourne Sharks, the match was called off after Sharks player Jonathan Munoz was injured to an extent where the ambulance had to come onto the ground and the match was called off. So the match will resume tonight from 8 p.m. and it will continue from the 53rd minute with the scoreline at 1-0 to Port Melbourne.
That's one hell of a warm-up for the players, by the way. 24 hours.
They got plenty of time to re-evaluate, reassess what's happening, and they'll only play, less than 40 minutes.
Absolutely, and it does change the complexion of the game. What scoreline was it before it...
It was 1-0 to Port Melbourne when the match was called off, so the match will resume tonight from the 53rd minute.
Okay.
And then with the scoreline at 1-0 to Port Melbourne.
Really interesting how that's going to pan out. So I look forward to the scoreline tomorrow. Anything else there, Athos?
Well, we're going to probably touch on some, not necessarily the good side of football, but in the UK, the Greater Manchester Police will continue to investigate the incident between Jamie Carragher and a Manchester United fan. While Carragher has been yet to be contacted by police, he says he was goaded 3 or 4 times, but admits there are no excuses for his behaviour. And Sky Sports have suspended him from work there as well.
I don't get it. I mean, really, a player or a person of his experience in world football, you'd think that with the amount of time he's played for Liverpool and his association with Liverpool, the amount of goading he's had over the years, almost weekly, even daily, and especially now with social media, and the fact that he's a pundit on TV, he'd be copying it left, right and centre every day. If he can't handle it, really, he should not be involved at all. And I'm disappointed with Sky Sports just suspending him. That was a full-on spit, as we know. And he's spitting at a 14-year-old girl. I mean, there's a real doubts about his character if he's doing things like that.
It was not a good look. And, you know, I hadn't seen it the first time, and I thought maybe, you know, there was a bit of salsa to this, but there was no hiding behind what he did. It was very evident that he did spit at the victim, and hopefully he gets what he deserves after that.
Yeah, not good enough, by the way. Not good enough. Not a guy who's as high standing as him, and I think he'll struggle to earn the respect now when he goes back to Sky. That's if they do re-employ him. But thanks very much, Athos, for your news this morning. We'll keep you up to date with any progress scores in the UEFA Champions League for the rest of the morning. But let's take a break. Coming up, it's James May, the president of Lidcombe Church's Soccer Club, in Club Corner here on Calcio Cafe. So stay tuned. You're on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Streaming football 24-7, you're on FNR Football Nation Radio, broadcasting live across Australia and live across the world. This is Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego. Those people interested in the UEFA Champions League results or progress results at the moment, Manchester United 0 and Sevilla 0 after 34 minutes. Roma and Shakhtar Donetsk also 0 all after 34 minutes. And also we've got some English Championship games going on at the moment. QPR after 34 minutes are 2-0 up against Aston Villa. And Hull City are 1-0 up against Ipswich after 34 minutes. The same again by way of time with Sheffield United at Burton Albion. Sheffield United 1-0 up after 35 minutes. Wolverhampton Wanderers and Reading after 33 minutes are 0-0. Brentford and Cardiff City 1-1 after 34 minutes. And Barnsley and Norwich 0-0 after 34 minutes. Coming up in the cafe this morning, we've got NPL, Planet NPL with the coach of Avondale FC in the NPL in Melbourne, Anthony Barbieri. But first, let's go to the club corner and speak to James May, the president of Lidcombe Church's Soccer Club in New South Wales. Good morning to you, James.
Good morning, Carlos.
Yes, it's great having you in the cafe this morning, mate. So Lidcombe Church's Soccer Club was formed back in 1939. The team at the time comprised of players whose ages ranged from 14 to 30. So it was a pretty much an all-ages type of team. And they'd never played the game before, apparently. And the result was 0-0 against Carlingford Hostel. And that was 79 years ago. What's the club look like today?
Well, we've grown from that one single team. At the moment, we've got 9 junior teams and 2 senior teams. So it's one all-age squad.
Okay, so how many registered players would that be?
Okay, at the moment, we've got around... I forgot to mention our ladies team. We've only had them for the last 2 years. This year, we've grown to 2 ladies teams. And our registered players overall, you're looking around, we're just doing the figures yesterday, we're looking around 180 to 200 registered players with all those teams.
So it's a really important service you're providing, activity you're providing for your community when you've got that many kids and that many players coming through. It means you're impacting that many families too. Do you feel a big responsibility when you're putting your programs out that they are, you know, run as best as they can with the best possible people involved?
Yes, we realise the responsibility we've got to the mainly the children that are coming through. In the last 3 years, we've developed what we call our Congo Kickers, which is basically a preschool program that we run. Mm. And from that, over the last 3 years, we've actually increased our under-6 and under-7 base teams that they've come through there. We've had extra players come through to that.
So, James, where are the kids coming from? Are they just gravitating to the club naturally, or do you go and promote your club out in the community?
We have to do a lot of promotion for the younger players. We put through the preschools in the area and the local primary schools.
Okay, and is it a hard sell, or once you introduce the idea of football in the area, they come flocking?
Basically, yes, we do introduce the football aspect, and we have a good rapport with the local preschools and the local schools, And often there's fires in the schools from other clubs around the area. But we've found that the rapport we've gotten, the way that we've looked after the children, especially over the last 15 years, parents will ask the teachers at the schools which club they like, and they just tell them the experience they've had with us.
So what do you think the point of difference between your club is and those other clubs in the area?
Well, I think it's the family base we've got that runs the club at the moment. The committee says myself, I'm the president. My brother Steve, he's the secretary. We've got another family there, the Kratzes. Lorraine's the vice president. Her son plays. He's on the committee. Her husband runs the canteen with her. And then there's another family, the James family. Ken James, he's actually the grandson of the founder of the club, Ted James.
Mm. Fantastic. And I think it's a real snapshot of what happens to many, many junior clubs or very many local grassroots clubs around Australia where families get involved and they're there for almost generations at times. Now, when you're talking about the teams on the field, of course, it's all about, you know, being active, playing with your friends and enjoying it. But obviously, you know, success and winning makes it even more enjoyable for the kids. Tell us about how successful the club's been at all ages with their teams in the last couple of years?
Over the last couple of years, we've actually won, last year we won two premierships in the junior ranks, and our senior first grade team, they won their Division 1 competition. We do, we're in different competitions, six-a-side competitions and things like that. Over the last 5 years in total, we've won around 20 competitions.
Fantastic. And what do you put down to the success of that? Because obviously you're a grassroots club and the focus may not always be winning, but you are quite successful.
Yeah, I think at the moment it's the way that the coaches that we've got and the way they handle the children. They don't focus on winning, but they're focusing mainly on teamwork and supporting both your family, your team and the club while they're going along. And it really helps to build some camaraderie, some teamwork and some spirit there, which it translates onto the field and the way that they play the game.
Fantastic, mate. You mentioned the women's team just earlier. The age group, the ages of the women playing, is it a bit of a big range given you've got the one team?
Yeah, we've got the youngest player is 16 and the oldest one we've got there is about, she's 43.
Okay, and what sort of level of development are they at the moment?
At the moment, well, basically last year it was we had 20 in the squad, and 16 of those they've played before, but out of that, 8 of them hadn't played for about 6 or 7 years. They've just come back and formed the club, the team, and a lot of them, the new players that we got through that were actually mothers of players that we've got in our junior ranks.
Okay,
and so they were. They were playing in the lowest division. They only won two games, but they all had a great year, and they've all come back this season.
Fantastic. Obviously, they've enjoyed it. Now, James, tell us about the younger girls coming through your women's team. Are they sort of motivated by what's happening in the W League at the moment and also with the Matildas, with some of those star players? Are they a bit of an inspiration to some of the younger girls?
They are. You hear them talking about them all the time while they're down training and playing. That's one of the first topics of conversation they have when they get together, when they show up.
That's fantastic that we've got these role models now that are really exciting some of these young girls. And not only, you know, I think girls have gravitated to the game for a long, long time, but now those girls who know that there might be a little bit of a career, there's an opportunity to represent Australia, even playing the top league in the W League. And with the sort of coaching that's going on these days, you can actually improve quite rapidly and be in that position where you can play at the top level. So it's great to hear that that's what the girls are saying and talking about at your club. How about those young kids, those really young kids in the sub-juniors or those kids, you know, around the 10-year-old mark that actually want to get, you know, want to be a professional footballer and they want elite training? Do you guys provide that sort of pathway for them?
Yes, through our local district, there is those the programs they have that they can go to, and we do promote those through the club for the players and the parents that are looking for that.
And how about facility? Obviously, as your club grows, you've got to make sure the facility is up to scratch and you've got enough grounds, enough change rooms to be able to cater for the diversity of people in your club. How is the challenge around facilities going?
That's a hard one at the moment because we operate on a local council ground, and our councils, two councils, have just merged in the area, forced by the New South Wales government last year. And just developing a new rapport with the new council is hard at the moment, but they're really helpful. They've been looking at our ground, which has been basically neglected by the council in the past compared to other grounds in the area. And the push on to work with the council in partnership is on at the moment, and they're actually going to be doing some work on our number one field in the next week or two to do some redressing and some levelling off before the season starts.
So, James, when you have difficulties with council, how do you deal with that? Obviously, you don't sit on your hands and do nothing because you've got a responsibility to all the kids and the families that are part of your club. Do you take a different approach? Do you somehow apply pressure in some way?
Yes, there is the grounds manager that we speak to initially. But if we're not getting any luck there after some while, we do actually put some pressure on the local alderman and also letters to the general manager of the council. But we haven't really had to do that a lot at the moment, but that's our avenues. We had to do it once, and we did get results from that.
Yeah, I think more and more clubs have got to do that, mate. We've got to fight for the facilities. We've got the numbers playing the game in this country, so we've got to take our share of facilities, and sometimes the councils need a bit of a prod, and well done for doing that. In 10 years' time, what's the club going to look like, James?
Well, with the growth in the area, there's a lot of high-rise buildings going up around us, because we're in Lidcombe. We're close to the Homebush Olympic site. And close to the new developments that are going along Parramatta River down towards that way. And it looks like in the next 10 years, we could actually double the size of the club at least.
That's great, James. I love the sound of clubs growing that way, as long as the facility comes your way also. But fantastic job with the club at the moment. It's fantastic that it's 79 years old and growing, and you're even talking about what it's going to look like in a decade's time. Great work there. Pass on my best to the committee and all the hard-working volunteers there, and all the best for the new season.
Thank you very much, Carlos. I appreciate your time.
Good on you, mate. That's James May, the president of Lidcombe Churches Soccer Club in New South Wales. Now let's talk a little bit of NPL.
Oh, that is breathtaking!
FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Yes, so joining us in Planet NPL this morning is Anthony Barbieri, senior coach of Avondale FC in the NPL in Victoria. Good morning to you, Anthony.
Good morning, Carlos.
Yeah, it's great chatting to you this morning, and you'd be a happy man at the moment. You had a comprehensive 5-2 win away at Hume on the weekend. It makes it three wins from the opening three games in the NPL in Victoria. The place must be buzzing at the moment.
Oh, yes, definitely. There's a good mood around the camp. It's always good to get off to a good start early on in the season. So, we're pretty pleased with it.
You certainly have started well this season, as you did last season also. You end up finishing third in the league, but knocked out early in the playoffs. What was your assessment of last season?
Well, look, I think all in all, we had a really positive season last year. We finished 10th the year before. Sorry, 8th the year before, and 10th the year prior to that. So, we're trying to build, and overall we looked at it at the end of the season and, we're really pleased with the progress the side had made.
We'll talk about the automatic promotion you guys had over a period of time, which actually is a record in Victorian football. But when you have that sustained success over time, the expectation, and suddenly you get to a point where you finish third in the league and there's some pretty powerful and big, big clubs ahead of you in Heidelberg and South Melbourne, what's your focus for this season?
Well, look, obviously you go out each season to try to be finish as high as you possibly can. So, like every other side in the league, everyone's ambition and aim is obviously, to try and win something and try and achieve something. So we looked at it at the end of the year and we looked at where we can possibly strengthen and how we could probably, tackle some of the bigger sides. And, using a holistic approach where, you know, we did a bit of a review, and that's sort of the path that we took at the end of the year.
You are a coach and a club that don't shy away from recruiting big-name former A-League players. So you've had, you know, the likes of Masbadoka, Jonathan Yamano, and other players coming to your club at different times over the number of the last couple of years. With that, people say, okay, well, they're recruiting all the best players, so they're, you know, they're deemed to get success. But there are challenges around that, aren't there, Anthony, having these big names in the change room in a league that often is not, you know, the biggest league that they've ever played in?
Yeah, look, a lot of those times when some of the boys come back from the A-League, you know, that they obviously they get a bit of a rude awakening. Sometimes, you know, the perception of the standard is sometimes less, is not always necessarily the case. So, you know, some of the boys that do come back and end up playing in the NPL always have a little bit of a, you know, I call it a little bit of jet lag early on until they sort of settle down and get themselves going. So, you know, that's one of the obstacles. But at the same time, you know, a club like ours, you know, battling with some of the big clubs, namely in South and Heidelberg, Oakley, and the like, is difficult and has its own challenges. You know, we're a, you know, small family club from humble beginnings, competing with some of these big sides. So you know, we have our own challenges.
I equate your club. I remember when Watford came through from Division 4 in the English Football League and they went all the way to the First Division and actually had some success. And I think Nottingham were the same, and also I think Wimbledon did the same over the years. And you guys achieved 5 promotions in 6 years to reach the NPL. Apparently, it's never been ever rivaled, that achievement in Victorian football. You were part of a lot of that. You were there since 2012. Can you tell us what plan you put in place all those years ago for that to happen, or did it sort of happen just naturally and as you got success, you got more confident and you decided to have another crack at it?
Well, funny enough, when I took over in 2012, 2 years prior, the club had been promoted out of you know, the amateur leagues and into State 3, and I went down there as a player. The following year, I actually took over the reins as the head coach, namely really just to help out. You know, the committee approached me and said, hey, listen, you know, we've never been in State 2. We'd really like to give it a bit of a push and try and get promoted. You know, what do you think? And I said, well, look, yep, I'm up for the challenge, and I think we can definitely give it a crack and a shake. And that's how the journey really started, Carlos. And then, you know, before you knew it, you know, we created a really good culture and a really good environment, which is the backbone of the club. And, you know, along that with some talented footballers. And, you know, year on year, we always look to try and improve and try and absolutely be the best we possibly can. And it resulted in, you know, some good results on the pitch. And in turn, you know, every year there was, you know, recruiting phase that took place and try and bring in good people and people that would fit into the culture at the club. And yeah, it's continued on today. And I think that's, you know, the foundation of the club.
If, I mean, there's many people around Australia who'll be listening to us live who are involved with clubs, and they'll listen later on podcast, and they'll be asking the question, you know, 5 promotions in 6 years, what are the ingredients? If you had 3 ingredients, you've done this now. You're an expert. You're probably one of the, you know, one of the few people in Australia that's ever achieved anything like this. If there were 3 or 4 elements to that continuous promotion from year to year, what would you say they have to be? Without giving away too many secrets.
that is really, you know, that is a difficult question. There's no magic wand that you cast over and you say, okay, bang, you know, you put these ingredients and you're going to have an amazing result. You know, there's always a little bit of an element of luck throughout the course of, you know, a 26-week-long season. But, you know, there's some key fundamentals. You know, you really need some good support and a good support staff around you as a head coach. That's, you know, vitally important. Yeah, like I said, you know, the change room needs to be, you know, everyone needs to be pulling in the right direction. You need to have buy-in from your players and try and and have everyone pulling in the same direction to try and achieve something from the outset. Obviously, throughout the course of the season, you'll always have your ups and downs, as is normally the case. But if you've got a good quality change room and the boys have, you know, enjoy, you're making them enjoy their football and their time together, that goes a long way.
And, of course, facilities have always been an issue with Avondale Football Club. This year, though, in 2017, in December, you ended up announcing that you'd signed a 10-year lease with the Reggio Calabria Club in Brunswick. Now, anyone knows Brunswick and knows Melbourne, that is a fantastic location. And having had a little bit to do with that club over the years, that football pitch at the back of the Soja Club is a fantastic location for you. So you must be really buoyed by the fact that you've been able to secure a home ground that's very central, and you get a lot of exposure from that that location.
Well, it is a great location. It is very central, so we're really pleased to have landed that. But it also, you know, will enable us to have a base, which we have not had in the past. Obviously, Doyle Street is, you know, the heart of the club, but obviously not up to standard to compete in the NPL. You know, the club has actively worked diligently off the field to try and secure a really good home base, and in the case of Reggio Calabria Club, and that will enable us to, you know, obviously continue to grow and, you know, give us that exposure and give us the facilities that we, you know, long for.
Now, Anthony, you've had almost a decade of sustained success, and of course there's talk of second division A-League maybe in the next 3 or 4 years. Is that a vision of the club to maybe step up? I mean, you, like I said, you've got a culture of success now. You're really punching way above your weight compared to the size of the club, and when you're comparing it to the other big clubs like the Heidelbergs and South Melbournes of this world. Do you ever have on your vision, on the whiteboard in the office, maybe a part of you know, a position in that second division if it does happen in the next 3 or 4 years?
Well, look, you know, I think we've got a lot of hard work to try and get there and achieve that, Carlos. So, you know, that is something that we have penciled in the future, obviously. But we, you know, we've still got a lot of hard work to try and achieve and tick off some of the criteria to try and achieve that, you know, namely, one, in the facilities, two, obviously, you know, our junior base has, you know, grown exponentially, you know, since I've been there. We went from two junior teams to over 20 now, which include women's. You know, we've had exponential growth in juniors as well. We've got over 250 juniors there now. So, you know, the club is looking towards, you know, trying to achieve that. But still, you know, we've got a long way to go in terms of trying to make it all sustainable.
Well, Avondale's done a wonderful job, really, as a small club that's achieved as much as you guys have. You're a real model for smaller clubs around Australia with a bit of ambition. Anthony, you've done a wonderful job there. Everyone at the club has done a wonderful job. Good luck for the rest of the season. You've started off really, really well, so you're certainly setting the scene for a terrific competition in the NPL in Victoria. All the best for the season.
Great. Thank you, Carlos. Appreciate your time.
Good on you, mate. That's Anthony Barbieri, senior coach there at Avondale FC in the NPL in Victoria, doing so, so well in the NPL. 3 wins out of 3, and they're starting off like a house on fire with some great players. I think they're going to go really deep into the finals this season. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we're going to catch up with Jeremiah Sullivan from Aussie Mags, the Newcastle United Sports Club here in Australia, here on Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego.
Culture Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Streaming football 24/7, you're on FNR Football Nation Radio, broadcasting live across Australia and live across the world. This is Culture Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego. And of course, we've got some UEFA Champions League games in progress at the moment. At halftime, Manchester United 0, and Sevilla 0, Roma 0, and Shakhtar Donetsk 0 also at halftime. In the English Championship, at halftime, QPR are 2-0 up at Aston Villa, Hull City are 2-0 up at Ipswich Town. We've also got Sheffield United United up 1-0 against Burton Albion. Wolverhampton Wanderers are 1-0 up against Reading. And Cardiff City are 2-1 up against Brentford away from home. And, of course, Barnsley are 1-0 up against Norwich. Coming up in the cafe very, very soon, we have Paul Williams talking all things Asian Champions League. But first, we're going to catch up in Power and the Passion with Jeremiah Sullivan from Aussie Mags, the Newcastle United Supporters Club in Australia. Good morning to you, Jeremiah.
Good morning, Carlos. How you going? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no, it's a real pleasure having you on, mate. I love passionate supporters. Even though you're supporting a team from overseas and you're still living the dream here, mate. Of course, Aussie Mags is a supporters group there for Newcastle United FC fans in Australia. How many Aussie Mags are there and how many? How did it all start here in Australia? How did you all come together in the first place?
Yeah, so we've got about 2,500 members right now on Facebook and about 1,300 on Twitter. Started about 12 years ago, actually, in 2006. So we've been around a while in terms of supporters groups in Australia. Started through one of my good friends, Andrew McTernan, and he had moved over from Newcastle with his wife living in St Kilda. And originally, it was just a way to get him to get over homesickness. So he organised a few mates in a bar in St Kilda at a 2 a.m. game, and they started watching games, and then created a Facebook page, and then it kind of slowly and slowly got bigger and bigger and bigger. And now it's kind of grown into, obviously, an Australia-wide thing. And we're predominantly based in Melbourne. Our biggest turnouts are always in Melbourne. We have a decent following in Sydney. And then we do our best to organise things in our Brisbane, Adelaide and Perth, but obviously with not one of our members there permanently and organising meets, it can be a bit difficult. But Melbourne and Sydney are kind of our main bases right now.
Now, Jeremiah, tell me what it's like for 2,500 people in Australia being so disappointed week in, week out for the
being miserable and unhappy 24/7.
Well, I mean, anyone who knows Newcastle United, I grew up being told it's a massive club, but you see their home games at St James's Park filled to rim every game, irrespective of where they are in the ladder or which league they're in. This is a massive, massive club, but they don't win things.
No, it's a massive club that's just underachieved for so long. And, I mean, you'll see, if Newcastle have won 5 games in a row and we organise a meet in Melbourne, we'll get 80 or 90 people there. If we've lost 5 or 6 games in a row, we'll get 10 or 15. So we're very much an up-and-down supporters group. When things are good, things are really good. Things are bad, things are really bad. But there never seems to be much middle ground with Newcastle. And, I mean, the amount of times I've got up at 2 or 3 a.m. to watch a 1 or 2, 3-0 loss away to Reading or Southampton or whoever it might be, the list goes on. But we're still there and we'll never stop supporting our club. Obviously, it gets hard times, but that's the thing about Geordies and Newcastle fans is they're passionate above everything, which is obviously our biggest downfall sometimes, because when you're trying to get things changed and change things at the club, there's always going to be 52,000 people there no matter what. So,
if I polled 2,500 Aussie Mags and I mentioned the name Mike Ashley, what would the overwhelming response be?
I'm sure there's one or two people out there that still think he's an all right person, but I don't know them. overwhelmingly unhappy. I mean, when I was living in Newcastle, there were all sorts of protests. The Mike Ashley Out campaign and True Faith have been great supporters of fans trying to get rid of him and support change in the club. I think Newcastle will never progress under Mike Ashley. And, I mean, the transfer windows with Rafa the last few seasons have proven that. He's unwilling to put in the money to support the club. I think we're the only Premier League club that hasn't broken our transfer record in the last 15 years. It's still Michael Owen from 2005, now 15.6 million. We're the only club in the Premier League not to have a £20 million player. We're just not going anywhere under Mike Ashley. And obviously, we've had a few takeover bids in the last few months, and they've all been turned down. So he's anything is greedy. And until he goes, I don't think the club can actually move on.
I know it's few and far between, but what's your biggest moment of joy for Newcastle?
As a fan?
Yeah.
Well, I did my gap year after university in Newcastle. So I moved over to England, bought a season ticket, went to a few away games. But for me, so I went to, I think, 8 away games when I was there. And my second one, we beat Tottenham away 2-1. And we went there with about 5 or 6 players injured. We started with Perez up top. He'd never played a Premier League game before. He was 18. And we actually turned around beating Spurs 2-1 in London. So for me, that was probably the best. We also beat Chelsea when there were 15 games undefeated at the start of the season at St James's Park. So there's a few highlights there for me personally. I think we made the quarterfinals of the Europa League in 2013-14. went under Alan Pardew when we finished fifth. But, yeah, I mean, they're few and far between. There's been a lot of negative moments as well. But.
Well, hang on to those moments really tightly, Jeremiah. They don't happen a lot of times, but look, I love your passion, mate. If there's some closet Newcastle fans out there in Oz listening to this right now, how do they find you?
Absolutely, mate. Send us a message on Facebook. Keep an eye on our Facebook page. We regularly update. We organise meets. We have a few things going on around Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane particularly. But, yeah, always keep an eye on the Facebook page and we'll organise as much stuff as we can. Obviously, it's hard with the time difference and the time of the games, but we do our best.
Mate, when you have your next big moment, we'll be in touch and we'll get you on FNR to talk about it. But thanks for joining us today.
No worries, Carlos. Look forward to it. Thank you.
Good on you, mate. That's Jeremiah Sullivan, the passionate, passionate member of Aussie Mags, the Newcastle United Supporters Club here in Australia. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk Asian Champions League football with Asian football expert Paul Williams here on Calcio Cafe on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Streaming football 24-7, you're on FNR, Football Nation Radio, broadcasting live across Australia and live across the world. This is Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego. And, of course, the UEFA Champions League games are in progress at the moment. After 52 minutes, Manchester United are nil-all with Sevilla. And, of course, Roma are 1-0 up against Shakhtar Donetsk. The goal scored in the 52nd minute there for Roma. But now it's time to talk Asian Champions League with our Asian Champions League expert, Paul Williams. Good morning to you, Paul.
Good morning, Carlos. How are you?
Yeah, really, really well, mate. The teams fared a little bit better last night, both Aussie teams, with victory having itself a win last night in a pulsating affair, I've got to say, and, of course, Sydney getting a draw over in Japan. Of course, victory have given themselves a chance of qualifying to the next stage. Sydney are going to really struggle to do that, but they played a lot better last night.
They did, but let's start with the victory game first. I mean, how good was that game last night? I mean, you know, I often talk about how good the Champions League can be, and it's a shame that not as many people in Australia embrace it as we would like them to. And but last night was just fantastic entertainment. It was non-stop action for the 90 minutes, and you know, victory. You know, they were on the back foot early, but they were able to work their way back into the game. And towards the end of the game, they were right on top of Kawasaki. So that was just a pulsating game of football, fantastic entertainment and a fantastic win for victory. You know, they've had a couple of great Champions League nights throughout their history. We can't forget the 4-3 game against Gamba Osaka. They've had wins against Guangzhou Evergrande and Shanghai as well. And this will go down as one of their great Champions League nights. And as you said, a really important win because it sets up the match next week away to Ulsan. And we know how bad their away form has been. Mm. You know, they're going to have to try and break that duck at some stage. And I think I said it on your show last week, there's no better time to do that than next week in Ulsan. I was just looking at the tables before I came on, and a win next week for either side will guarantee them a spot in the knockout rounds because of the way it's structured on with head-to-head being the first differential. So, you know, victory were to get the win over Ulsan next week, that will guarantee them a spot in the round of 16. So it's literally all to play for next week. So it's a huge game for victory.
So, Paul, other than passion and persistence and real motivation last night, what did victory do differently?
I think, and again, I think I said it last week, they didn't do a lot differently, and that's Kevin Muscat's modus operandi, really. He generally puts out the team exactly the same every week, which is sometimes what frustrates the fans the most, is that there isn't a hell of a lot of flexibility in the way he plays. And I don't think they, you know, set out to play any differently again last night. They try to be the aggressor at home, and I guess the difference was that when he made his changes last night, he made them a lot earlier than what he would than what he normally would. So he brought Josh Hope on, you know, with still about more than half an hour left to play. Kenny Achiu came on for Besart Berisha with about 20 minutes left to play as well. And I think it just really changed up the game a little bit, injecting some fresh blood and some youthful enthusiasm into the squad. And that really had an impact. I thought Josh Hope was good. Kenny Achiu was good when he came on again last night. So I think victory just set out the way to play the way they normally do. And you know, maybe the fact they've got some wins in the A-League recently has given them some confidence. They got that 2-2 draw last week that would have given them some extra confidence, and maybe that's all they needed to actually, you know, get back Gepak on the winners list.
I've got to say, I was really impressed with Athieu when he came on. The fact that he does so much good work with his back to goal and bring other people into the game, I don't think Victory's... Bess is sort of, you know, he's known to do it every now and again, but in the round goals, he's pretty selfish, which, you know, he scores a lot of goals because of that too. I don't want to, you know, disparage Bessart Berisha. But having someone with his back to goal and bringing other people into it was sort of something new, really, last night that we saw in the Victory game.
Yeah, and he's a different player to Berisha as well, so he offers something different, a little bit different up front when he comes on, which is important as well. I mean, that's what you want from a substitution. You know, you don't want just effectively a cookie cutter to come in and replicate what you've already got out there. That's why you make the substitution, to try and, you know, mix it up a little bit. And as you said, and it's the runs that he makes. He's got some speed that Berisha doesn't have at the moment. Obviously, he's, you know, getting on in age, so he's lost a touch of speed. Achiu has that. And he just has that little bit of X factor about him. He's just a little bit unpredictable because you don't know what he's going to do. So, he was really impressive when he came off last night.
Of course, Sydney had a draw away from home last night. Adrian Mizievski, a star last night. The way he played and made opportunities for his teammates were fantastic. And Matty Simon ended up getting the goal.
Yeah. That was if you take out the context of the match, that was and you just looked at a 1-1 draw away from home against Kashima, you know, Sydney would, you know, probably be happy with that, especially with, you know, the side they had out there. They didn't have Bobo and Ninkovic, and they had injury, so there was a really, you know, their depth was really tested last night. So just on face value, Sydney would have been happy with a draw, but given, as I said, now you add the context in, and given where they are in that group, they really needed to get to the 3 points last night. And, you know, they're pretty much out of calculations now for a spot in the round of 16. You know, I thought Kashima again were the best side last night. They probably should have scored a couple of goals before Sydney equalised. Mu Kanazaki and Yuma Suzuki were excellent up front, I thought. Mu Kanazaki in particular, I thought he was really dangerous with his runs and with the ball at his feet. But, you know, Sydney stuck fat. And Mijajewski, he was everything for Sydney last night. He set up that first goal. Almost a couple of minutes later, set up a goal that would have put them ahead when he played in Alex Brosk with a beautiful pass. So, you know, if they didn't have Mijajewski last night, they would probably been in a little bit of bother. But he just showed his class last night and showed that he belongs on this international stage.
Well, on Victory front, it's really hotting up, Paul. I cannot wait to see what's going to happen next week, and I look forward to speaking to you again next week about it.
Look forward to it, hopefully with a Victory win and a spot in the round of 16 assured.
Absolutely, mate. Speak to you next week.
Thanks,
that's Paul Williams, the football expert with Asian Football here, talking about the Asian Champions League on FNR Football Nation Radio. That brings an end to Calcio Cafe for today. You can podcast the show on iTunes and SoundCloud. So until this time tomorrow, may you have a great day in football.
Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.